Welcome to the What's Haunting You podcast, where we work on healing that which haunts us. With me, Micah. Welcome to the What's Haunting You podcast. So I appreciate you checking out my podcast for its second episode. And the topic today is very close to my heart, and I feel like it's foundational to all my future episodes. So I wanted to make it. And I'm going to have a even tempo throughout. People have been amused by my introduction, especially people who know me. I do add a dose of silliness to it because I think it's important to not take ourselves too seriously. My grandmother taught me that, and my father. But my grandma, every time she did something goofy or made a mistake, she would just find a reason to crack up, and her squinty little face would squish and she would laugh. And it was just brings joy to my heart to think about. So I want to offer that to my granddaughter, hopefully someday, to take a breath and know that you're going to make mistakes. And guess what? You learn more and grow more from your mistakes than your successes anyway. So it just means you're ready to grow, which isn't a bad thing. Onward and upwards. So that brings me to today's topic, shadow work. I'm recording this the day the full moon lunar eclipse happens in Pisces. And that's usually a time when difficult things are showing up for us, right? Anything that's been suppressed in our shadow, or maybe somebody in our orbit shadow, is surfacing and it needs to be addressed. It's being called to be addressed. The more difficult it is, the more it needs to be addressed, and maybe the longer it's been repressed, right? So I'm making this as an opportunity for you and for all of us to have some energetic support while working through it. I have the intention that this is a nice, auspicious topic and time to support this particular energy. So hopefully it is helpful for all of you. So this leads me to why we would even want to do shadow work. Well, like I mentioned a minute ago, sometimes life forces us to. The more we avoid it, the more circumstances seem to challenge us to face it. It's kind of like when you ignore a pain in your body too long. You might even know somebody who put something off for too long, and then by the time they went to the doctor, it was advanced to a frightening point. There's a saying, I've been in medical my whole life, but I don't remember this saying exactly, but it's something like doctors say, listen to the whispers before they become screams. Because once the screams happen, it's so much harder to go backwards and try to heal something than to just address something the second it's coming up for you. And sometimes you just need a little bit of gentleness to work through something, and then it never will have to scream at you. And that includes our psyche. But our body does speak to us about our psyches too. And I'll get into that later too. There's a level of peace that you can gain when you do shadow work. I tend to over-intellectualize anyway. That's one of my coping mechanisms. But for me, the more I think about something, the more I understand it, the more I can let it go. And the easier it is for me to forgive if I feel it's appropriate to forgive. But to let it go is what's most important, because hanging on to stuff does eat away at you physically, not just mentally and emotionally. And that self-awareness can also help you create better boundaries. It helps you learn how to become more capable of giving and receiving all of the good things in life. Sometimes people are people pleasers and they're all overgiving, and they don't know how to receive in a healthy way. And then they become depleted and resentful. So when you do shadow work, you learn that delicate balance for you, what that homeostasis means for you. And you might have to redevelop your homeostasis once you do that, which is also a little tricky, but it's worth it. Your relationships become so much healthier. They're more fulfilling because they're more reciprocal. When both of you are introspective enough to recognize how you show up in a situation, you can take a step back and learn how to respond as opposed to just react. And when you are responding, you're working in the frontal lobe. You are in your nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system that helps you be more cognitive of every aspect and all the nuance that's happening in a situation. When you react, you're hijacked. You're in your sympathetic nervous system, and you're in that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn state, which helps you in no way. It might help you when you are in immediate threat. Yes, absolutely. If your life or health is in an immediate danger, then yes, it is very useful. But because we haven't done shadow work, or if we haven't done it yet, or worked through an old repressed trauma yet, then we're more reactive to things. And the more reactive we are, the more that compounds on itself, right? So when you get to a space of being able to take a step back and you feel that reaction, but you're able to hold it long enough to take a breath and give it some thought and know to approach the situation with a little bit more self-awareness so that you're not just feeling like you're going to have to defend yourself if somebody says something to you that you might not want to hear, but you can hear it and say, yes, I see that. And, you know, it's just makes your life so much easier just to rip the Band-Aid off and just handle it as it comes up, right? So I want to talk about specifically, though, what the shadow is. For me, if I were to sum it up, I'd say in simple terms, it's the rejected part of ourselves where our deepest shame resides. So I'll quote to you, and I'm going to read exactly what the SAP, the Society of Analytical Psychology, how they define the shadow. So reading from that website, it says the shadow and identity. Complementary to Jung's idea, that's Carl Jung, of the persona, which is, and this is to quote Carl Jung, what oneself as well as others thinks one is. The, quote, shadow is that hidden, repressed, for the most part, inferior and guilt-laden personality whose ultimate ramifications reach back into the realm of our animal ancestors. If it has been believed hitherto that the human shadow was the source of evil, it can now be ascertained on closer investigation that the unconscious man, that is his shadow, does not consist only of morally reprehensible tendencies, but also displays a number of good qualities, such as normal instincts, appropriate reactions, realistic insights, creative impulses, etc. So there's a second part about the shadow's potential that's fairly brief, but I want to pause for a moment and talk about and insert a thought that I want you to hold in your mind as I continue, because people, especially in spiritual communities, talk a lot about killing the ego. And that makes me cringe. That is so cringe to me because, again, oversimplification that's online a lot can do more harm than good a lot of times. And this is one of those cases. There is healthy ego and there is unhealthy ego. Healthy ego is what keeps us safe. Healthy ego has healthy judgments. A healthy judgment is something where, let's say I have an alcoholic family member and they are self-destructive. And I have done everything within my power to help them without compromising too much of myself. I knew my own limits. And now it's pushing my own boundary for my own self, my health, my mental, physical, psychological, spiritual health. I can't keep doing this. My cup is empty. A healthy judgment acknowledges that and forms a plan and a boundary around that. And boundaries are allowed to be flexible according to different people and how they learn and grow. And how they're changing. And the healthy ego recognizes this because it wants what's best for everybody, right? Sorry, my hair tickled me. Tickle, tickle. Okay. Got all these tickles. Look at my nervous system's getting activated. But so healthy ego, the unhealthy ego is in it for themselves because they're working on the shadow, because there's a part of themselves still that feels inadequate, that feels inferior, that feels insecure. And they are almost overcompensating to prove to themselves, or maybe somebody from their past in an unconscious way, even if that person isn't around anymore, that they're capable, that they're lovable, that they're worthy, that they're deserving. You're innately deserving as a human being, but something teaches us otherwise at some point throughout our life, whether it's usually the biggest impacts are from our primary caregivers, parents, the like, but it also can come from our social circles. Well, that's where the unhealthy shadow comes from, the unhealthy ego, because it's an animal instinct. We're in our, again, that aspect of our fight, flight, or freeze nervous system, and we're not thinking clearly with our entire brain and the entire encompassing aspects of what it is to be part of humanity and the collective consciousness. So, healthy ego has the realistic insights, the creative impulses. It's like based on agape in Christian language, biblically speaking. The Greeks use the word agape to encompass that selfless love your neighbor as yourself. It has a healthy boundary, but you still act from a place of love and hoping that people will find their way without it affecting you in an unhealthy way. That's healthy ego. Unhealthy ego is just have to prove this, have to do this, defensive, constantly aggressive, like it's coming from a space, from an unmet need, right? So let's go into what the SAP says is the shadow's potential. What needs to be emphasized very strongly here is that the shadow contains all sorts of qualities, capacities, and potential, which, if not recognized and owned, maintain a state of impoverishment in the personality and deprive the person of sources of energy and bridges of connectedness with others. For example, a person might believe that to be assertive is to be selfish, so he has to go through life being pushed around by others and deep down seething with resentment, which in turn makes him feel guilty. In this case, his potential for assertiveness and his resentment both form part of his shadow. Analysis might challenge his value system, track it back to its origins, help him to become more embodied and thereby more in touch with his needs, and open up areas of choice, which would probably lead to his resentment diminishing. End quote. So this is basically telling us that emotions and certain behaviors, such as jealousy, rage, being overly self-involved, projecting on other people, are all areas where shadow work needs to be done. They're all also, you can think of them as pathways to discovering what in you is being repressed or denied, and most importantly, where your greatest potential lies. When I have something like this happen, what I have started to see is, after all the work I've done over the years, because shadow work is never over, there's a new layer. And remember that part of you, that like the shadow part, is the most permanent part of the brain. It's the most permanent neural pathways in the brain. So you are learning to create new neural pathways. So those entrenched neural pathways will always be there because they're there from developmental ages. And those are the most permanent parts, permanent ones. But we have the power to create new ones. And creation comes from healthy ego and working through our shadow and being aware of our potential and what we're capable of. Even if we haven't gotten there yet, me doing this video is part of me working on my shadow. And I'll explain why in a little bit. But triggers for me is an opportunity. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. What unmet need is driving this feeling is the question I ask myself. And I might know immediately why I'm behaving the way I do, and I have to put my unhealthy, wounded child ego aside and acknowledge, especially the more important the relationship is to me, like with Jim. And I'll say, okay, I recognize I was saying this, or I did this, or it came across this way. And that's because XYZ, it's about me and it's not about you. And I apologize because I do recognize that I blah, blah, blah. But it brings us closer and it allows me to be more aware so that I can avoid that in the future, hurting him further. But he also recognizes what's happening also because he's getting to know me better and he can more come from a space of being lovingly mention what's going on because you sounded a little like this or you did this or, you know, so there's something deeper happening here and he's less likely to get defensive as well. So I want to make an aside here that social and cultural influences can play a significant role. Like for me, religious trauma is a core thing for me. So keep that in mind when you're considering looking for help. Consider looking for a licensed trauma-informed therapist because a trauma-informed coach would also be recommended. I'll give an example of why being trauma-informed is important, but also keep in mind your own background socially and culturally when you're looking into who you would want to help support you through whatever healing process you're going through. Before I get into this example of what can go wrong and why it's important to get the right help, the right person to help you, the right support, let me start by saying, keep in mind throughout this part also, licensed therapists work on the past and the present, and coaches work on the future and present. Okay. So if you didn't know which to see, psychologists focus more on talk therapy, and they may recommend a medication to your primary care doctor or a psychiatrist if you're seeing one, but only psychiatrists can prescribe medication. But either one is sufficient. It's your call as to which direction you feel you need to go. Nobody should be making that decision but you. But I'm going to go into more depth as to give you an idea of how to navigate that and how to know who you need to maybe see, depending on where you're at in your journey. But again, licensed therapists help you work through something that's from the past that you know is impacting your present in a debilitating way to where you feel like you can't move forward or you need to shift something in your life. And you know that that is nagging at you. And until you address that, you're not going to be able to. That's licensed therapists, medical health professionals. Coaches are there to help support your goals. So you and a therapist may come up with homework or goals or something to do, and a coach holds you accountable. A coach helps you like really nail down how do we make this goal. They are more, let's look at where you're at now and where you want to go, focused. And they're not going to delve into the psyche, okay? So I saw a podcast interview that triggered me. And I know if you've seen my other YouTube videos, there's one, I mentioned it in another one I did a while back. So I'm sorry if this sounds redundant to you, but I need to bring it up as an example again with the shadow work podcast, because I'm going to get deeper as to psychologically speaking, why it was a problem. This woman who called herself an astrologer and shadow coach was being interviewed by two podcasters that I liked to listen to. And she, and I don't, forgive me, but I don't remember the exact verbiage, but essentially what I was hearing was the client was talking about how there are aspects of her psyche that she feared or that she couldn't relate to. She was having trouble with those, and the coach recommended, God bless her, with the best of intentions, to name each one so that she could maybe not, they wouldn't be as fearful to her. I get why or where she was trying to go with that. But when you aren't trained in a specific way, and I was a mentor in trauma psychology for 5 years, which is why I feel so passionately about this. But if you're not trauma-informed, you know that you are delving into somebody's psyche. The second you, that she, the client mentioned her psyche, and that should have put a pause in the entire session, period, end of story. So what it can do, that could, in that moment, potentially add to the client's shame, why they've done, created different aspects of their psyche, and even add to their trauma, even potential complex trauma, complex PTSD. It encourages further rejection and dissociation. So I'm going to get very specific now about what the difference is between dissociation and disassociation, because we use disassociation a lot in our culture. It's a common word because we do it a lot. Netflix and binge, please. But dissociation is more serious, and it is a recognized term in psychology and psychiatry where disassociation isn't. So, and I'll put references again at the end of this so you can read more about this if you want to. But understanding dissociation refers to a mental process where a person disconnects from their thoughts, feelings, memories, or sense of identity. The dissociation definition refers to a coping mechanism often triggered by traumatic events like abuse or something, or neglect. Dissociation can range from mild detachment to severe cases where it disrupts daily life. Symptoms of dissociation might include memory loss, like amnesia even, forgetting specific time periods, events, or personal information. I think anybody with CPTSD or PTSD is familiar with this. I still have memory loss that I likely won't ever get back, but my body did it to protect me. And all of these things happen in the moment to protect you, but then they become debilitating when you're no longer in that circumstance, because your body and brain don't always know how to, they don't know normal. They don't know how to go to a natural homeostasis, and you need support and direction in understanding how to do that, because you don't know any other way. You know, you need a blueprint of sorts. Another symptom, out of body experiences, feeling as though you're watching yourself from outside your body. Emotional numbness, a sense of detachment from your emotions or a lack of emotional response. Identity confusion or alteration, feeling unsure of who you are or experiencing multiple distinct identities, as severe as what's seen in dissociative identity disorder. Those are so close, I want to make sure I'm saying it the same way, the correct way. Another symptom is depersonalization, a feeling of being detached from your own body or thoughts as if you're an outside observer. Another trauma thing that happened a lot with me is you lose sensation in your body. You physically don't feel something. A lot of people, when they go and like maybe get a massage or something, and they want the therapist to get really intense, I need it deep, I can't feel it. Well, that tells the therapist this person still has trauma locked in their body, which is why for me, when I had that going on, I went backwards and did cranial sacral therapy and energy work so that I learned how to feel safe in my body. So then I didn't need something that could actually re-traumatize my body because I wasn't feeling it, and have it be so intense to where I'm sore and bruised the next day. It helped me receive healing therapy in a more, regulated manner, I guess is the way to say that. But yeah, cranial sacral therapy changed my life more than anything, which is why I learned it. Derealization, a feeling that the world around you is unreal, dreamlike, or distorted. Difficulty connecting with reality, struggling to distinguish between what is real and what is not. Detachment from surroundings, a sense of disconnection from your environment and the people in it. In everyday language, disassociation may be used informally to describe a general sense of disconnection or disengagement, but it does not refer to a specific mental health condition. If you're disassociating, you're just zoning out. It's a temporary loss of focus or attention during conversations or tasks. Mild disengagement, feeling mentally checked out or not fully present at the moment. I want to also mention that with zoning out, sometimes that's a go-to for creatives because it actually can help you access a creative part of your brain. It's kind of like you move into a place of stillness, and it can be almost like a meditative thing. Disassociating is when you are almost, it starts to become habitual to where it's interfering with your life. That's when you want to kind of look at it and see what's going on, why you feel the need to tune out. And you, those are little micro things that you can sometimes, the earlier you address these disassociations, if they start to become too prominent before they become dissociations. Mild disengagement is another way to, I think I already said that, feeling mentally checked out or not fully present in the moment. But temporary disconnect is another symptom of disassociating, where you momentarily feel disconnected from your surroundings, often due to boredom or fatigue. So if you understand these distinctions, and then you reflect back on the advice given to the client by the coach, you can see how it could exacerbate any pre-existing mental health condition that this client likely already has. And PTSD, unresolved trauma, is a mental health condition. So you can also see that this was the opposite of integrating aspects of the psyche, which is the core of shadow work. This was bordering behavioral health therapy from an unlicensed practitioner, though. I'm not a licensed practitioner, so I can't say for sure, but in my training, I feel like it would be. As an alternative healer, and I use that term loosely because I don't like that term specifically, because we facilitate healing, but we aren't doing your healing for you. But alternative healing practitioners are trained to stay in their lane. They have good training and certifications. They're trained to recognize potential issues in a consultation or early on when working with a client. And then we know to stop the session and refer them. And that's something that I'm really good at, especially with my background, long extensive background in different medical fields. I'm very good at recognizing something early, especially with my trauma background. And I'm very good at triaging. I'm a guide. That's what I'm good at. Somebody can come and present something with me, and I might have one session with them to help ascertain a little bit more and help them get to a certain goal. But then I'm really good at saying, you know, XYZ might be a good next step for you to look into, see if it resonates with you. But that's another reason why I like to do initial consultations at no charge for free, because briefly, really brief ones, because it kind of gives me a sense. It gives us both a sense of if it would be reciprocal, if I would be able to help them at all, or if I feel like maybe something else might be a better idea for them. My favorite doctors all do that. You know, anytime I see a doctor and they're like, well, I'm recognizing XYZ. That's not my area of expertise, but I do have somebody that I trust with this. I mean, I respect somebody a lot when they say, this has hit my area of expertise, because that, again, they've done their shadow work. They're not working from an unhealthy ego. They're in healthy ego. They're respecting your boundary, even if you don't know you have one, right? And then they are sending you to somebody that they know would be more helpful to you. And that's how I like to practice, because that's what I want. Coaches should never suggest anything that directly influences the psyche without a license. That is not their place. I can say that as a coach. I did the training for the license, but the license is expensive, so I only have a certification of training. Let's talk about who shouldn't do any kind of shadow work to kind of wrap up this first part, because this is a deep topic. So I'm going to wrap this up and then we'll go to the second part next week. But who shouldn't do any kind of shadow work without the support of a licensed mental health professional? Anyone who knows they have unaddressed and/or suppressed trauma, and you know it deep down, Some people think that they can bypass something repressed and still try to get shadow work. And to some degree, that works a little bit. Like, you might have some awareness and what you're comfortable working on, and then you work on that and it helps. And that's great. And that's good. It's always good to, even if it's small, it's something, you know, having faith in yourself and recognizing that you need to do something for you or for the people you love that doesn't sacrifice too much of you is healthy, healthy ego. And you're already on the right track. But if you're trying to bypass or jump to the integration and peace part without doing the work, without facing it, then you're not going to get the peace or integration. And you're not going to get it without awareness and acceptance of all aspects of our psyche. Well, doing shadow work means embracing everything about ourselves, even the yucky parts that we'd rather not look at. Because when you're doing it, you're also looking at yourself with compassion as you learn to understand how those, what those parts were born from. Because it's usually something awful that wasn't your responsibility or wasn't your fault to begin with. And then also, anyone struggling with an addiction should not be doing shadow work at all. If you need help with anything, but you're not ready to face the addiction part, you should still see a licensed therapist help you through that and address addiction when they and you both agree it's time. If you have a serious mental health illness of any sort, any issue, whether it's diagnosed or not, I mean, anything from severe anxiety to a diagnosis, you would want to have the support of a licensed therapist. So in the next episode, we're going to address how to know when it's a good time to do shadow work, when is the best time it's going to help you along your journey of healing, and how to notice those opportune moments better and easier and quicker to get through them smoother. And I'll give, as an example, a brief look into my own journey of shadow work and how it really started to come into my awareness that I was even doing shadow work, or that I was supposed to, even if I didn't have the verbiage yet. Now that in retrospect, I'm like, hey, I was doing shadow work and didn't realize it. But I'm going to give you a useful tool I gained from those times that I still frequently use that helps me still. And I've given it to other people and it's helped them a lot. They've come back to me and say, oh my gosh, this made a world of difference. It was so simple. So I look forward to sharing that with you. I'm excited. And I'll do that at the end of my part two episode. But thank you so much. I look forward to sharing that with you next week. And hang in there during the solar eclipse. The next week one will still be in the eclipse season. So shadow work happens all the time, though. I just thought this was a good time to bring the topic up. Thank you so much.